two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Welcome into the Crimson Corner. I am your host and Utah Utes Insider for KSL Sports, Michelle Botkin. I don't know if you all have noticed, but some strange and even disappointing things have recently taken place in college football. Feels like those things are here to stay, and I know a lot of people have expressed waning interest in sports because it's wiped clean of everything that made it special. I agree with you, which is why I thought now would be a good time to tell this particular story. I'm going to take you back to the time I fell in love with the idea of telling sports stories. The year was 2009. Utah football just manhandled Alabama in the Sugar Bowl. Anything and everything felt possible for the Utes in that moment. As a freshman in college taking an introductory criminology class, I met one of the key players in that game who would ultimately go on to be a key player in my life and growth as a person. If you love what I do, you better thank him. And if you can't stand me, well, send him your hate mail. please welcome into the podcast, Robert Rojo Johnson. Could you imagine me ever saying that, like, or saying anything like that when we first met?
No. And I mean, I appreciate those words. Like, I've been knowing you for so long. It feels like we literally were just having this conversation about like my kid.
Yeah.
He's a middle schooler now. And like, it's been that long. Like, gosh, but no, I really appreciate you. You know, you're the one that always helped me get exposure. And on top of that, you even helped me in class. So, you know, it meant a lot to me. And like, you and your family have always been wonderful to me. So, you know, I appreciate you.
Oh, totally. So you're telling me that you did get that C in that criminology class?
Hey, I got my degree. That's
what matters. That's what we like to hear. These get degrees. You could have my notes all day. It was totally fine. I was awake. You were not.
Yeah, And I still remember your red car. Yeah, I remember
yes,
that.
Yes, the 300 CX. Uh-huh. Yes. it was kind of funny trying to stuff you into that thing on occasion. You did not fit very well.
No, I did not. But it was still, it just brings back the memories. That's how long we've been knowing each other.
Yes, a very, very, very long time. Well, I mean, we mentioned it's been 15 years since you and I met, which also means it's been 15 years since the Sugar Bowl. The Crimson Club just barely announced that they are inducting you guys into the Crimson Club Hall of Fame. What does that mean to you, looking back on that time frame and knowing that that game meant so much?
Oh, gosh. I mean, the University of Utah, like the state of Utah at that time was like rocking because it was just like, this is another big game and another big notch on the state of Utah, and the University of Utah backed us up so much. And I mean, I'm very thankful that we finally getting into the Hall of Fame. We finally getting in. We was always talking about it here and there, like, you know, that 10-year mark is when we start like, hey, are we going to get mentioned to like even be a part of this special team or this special group or this, you know, this fraternity that they have at the University Hall of Fame? And to see that we're finally getting in, it felt good to like talk to the boys. And we've been talking through emails, you know, just among each other. And, you know, it's when you have those type of connections with, well, not those connections, when you went through something like that, where you went undefeated and y'all was together for so long, like throughout that whole year. And it was a lot of stuff that happened that year too, if you think about it, it was a whole lot. And looking at the emails, you know, that we sent at each other, the email chain, it's like we never missed a beat, man. We're still cracking jokes, laughing. Even BJ got in on some of the emails. Coach Anderson is in some of the emails. It's like you make a family within that family. And even though it's been so long, we have not stepped away from respecting each other and honoring each other, and understood that that year we had one goal, which was to make sure that we win as many times as we can. And it wind up being an undefeated season.
Yeah. I mean, talk about that. Like, you kind of had touched on it already, but you guys are still incredibly close. I saw, you know, a bunch of you had a big get together over the summer. What's it like having a relationship like that with your teammates still, even 15 years later?
Yeah, it was at an apartment that I was staying at, I was renting out my home, and I was at an apartment, and we decided to have the get together at a pool party. Mm-hmm. And I just remember me and Steven Sylvester, me and Sly. Sly is the head person, though. Sly has been the one that's making sure these emails is getting to everybody that was on that team. And we shout out the email that was like, hey, we all gonna get together. If y'all wanna come in the summertime, come early and let's see what happens. And it was a lot of people that showed up. Like, yeah. Freddie Brown showed up, which was
crazy.
Like, I haven't seen Freddie in so long. Yeah, Freddie Brown showed up. Shakron showed up. It was a lot of people that popped in, and I was just like, wow, like it's just been that long to kind of see the guys. And it just feels so good to know that we was all able to see each other, have the families together, because we all got different families now. We all grown now with kids or married or still trying to live that single life, you know, some of us. But, you know, it's a bond that you can't break, because we know the blood and sweat and tears that we had during that season. And we know what it took to get there. But we also knew what it took to continue to trust each other on and off the field, because it was things that was happening. It was just, you got to trust. And that was the biggest thing that Coach Anderson on our defense that said that, Coach Sataki, Coach Scally, defense wise, we made sure that off the field, we had to stick together like we would on the field, you know. And then offense wise, I believe it was the same thing offense wise. And Coach Witt just made sure to do that. And, you know, it kept us humbled, and it kept us on top of our A game.
Talk about that. Looking back on that time, living in those moments, could you have ever imagined what that accomplishment would ultimately help, you know, launch the university into what they're doing now, and getting to see that happen, knowing kind of the background of where that started and being a part of that background?
I know I could not imagine it was going to be this much of the conference switching. You know, like a lot of people tell me around the facility, whenever I go up there to see the guys or see the boys up there, they always let us know that our year, helped us get into the Pac-12. You know, at that time, and we didn't have no thoughts behind it. It was just like, we want to go undefeated. We said that. Mm-hmm. That was in the summertime, and we said that because, I don't know if you remember, but most of the fans, hopefully you should remember this, is that we had a film crew that was following us that whole season. Mm-hmm. And the film crew recorded a lot of us, you know, like a lot of our individual, like, one-on-ones, and just like hearing us have conversations about, like, you know, like, we just got to take it one game at a time. If we get past Michigan, we can get past a lot of other teams. And it was just like, as the season was going, we had our goals set up for that summer, and those goals was getting knocked down every week. Every week, those goals were getting knocked down, and going undefeated was one of the goals that we had, as well as getting to a BCS game was one of the goals. And we was able to scratch off all those. And, you know, like, future wise, we didn't know that, but the plan was stick to our goals. Cross out a goal every week.
So what was the highlight for you personally of that year? Because it was an incredible year, and I would have to imagine it was probably the highlight of your entire career, going doing that undefeated season, busting the BCS, all that good stuff.
That season was tough for me. It was very, very hard on me. And, you know, like the high, like I wouldn't say it was the highest of my career, even though it was undefeated. And it was one of my highlights or one of my high moments was that Alabama game, you know, Alabama game where I was able to get 2 interceptions and I almost had a third and I dropped it. Julio Jones slapped it out of my hands. But, you know, that was one of the highlights of the year. For me, but it was a very tough year. Coach Scally was on me. Like he was on me and me and him just could not see eye to eye that season, but we tried our best to get through things. And Coach Scally made me a better man with the way that he was pushing me to be not just a good football player. He was pushing me to be a better leader and lead by example. And at that time, you know, when I'm younger, I'm like, dude, I'm not about to keep doing this with you. But it was a tough season because it was some games I didn't even play in a quarter. Like the Oregon State game, I did not play. I don't think I started the first quarter. I got in the middle of the third quarter, I think. And I wound up playing the rest of the game. But yeah, it was games that I missed. And I don't think anybody even knew that I wasn't playing. It was because me and Scally was just bumping heads and I couldn't understand his concept. So it was a very, very tough year for me, and I felt like my production was down because of that. But it was me being immature. You know, that's what it was. It was me being immature and thinking I know it all when I should have just did exactly what needed to be done like I did my senior year.
Talk about that a little bit, because I, you know, it comes up all the time. You hear the coaches. I actually was just barely up on campus today and Coach Scally talked about that very thing. Like, fall camp is not for the faint of heart if you come and play for Utah. But I mean, just the entire program, really, like there is that saying, we will not become you. You will become one of us. Like, and yeah. It sounds like you had to go through that process a little bit, which is a little surprising to me because it felt like, at least from the outside, and at that time I was very much on the outside, you had it going on.
Yeah, it was hard. And, you know, like that line right there, you got to be part of us. That was something that it was hard to accept, to be honest with you. It was hard to accept. But like I said, my junior year, that year that we went undefeated, I could not get this culture thing of, like, you know, culture this or fit, you know, like you're not going to be the one to stand out, fit. But it was bigger pictures on the wall going into my senior year where it's like doing your job, you know, protecting your teammate on the field. You know, I was not that year we went undefeated. I wasn't mature enough to understand that the coaches wasn't saying it exactly in those words, because when you hear it in those words of like, you're going to fit us, we're not going to let you, you know, do what you want, that don't fit right with somebody from the inner city.
Yeah.
It didn't fit right with me at all. It's like, I'm going to do what I want to do. I'm not about to allow you to, what? Like, y'all recruited me, you know, like that's how I was feeling. But my senior year, you hear it. And it was just like, I hear you, but I'm seeing what's more important. I'm seeing the details, or I'm seeing the bigger picture to your words. I'm not just seeing it as words. I'm seeing it as like, yeah, Rojo, be a team player. You know, help out the other safeties. That's there. Making sure you go to class on time. You know, hey, be in control of your weight. Understand that, you know, your weight is everything when it comes to this. Make sure to lift weights. It was just those bigger words wasn't seen that undefeated season, which was my junior year. I was seeing it as a slap in the face because it's like, I'm not trying to fit in. I'm trying to just do what I can for the team. But it's like, was I really doing what I can for the team, or was I just being selfish and doing what I felt that was best for me?
I mean, and here's the thing, you come from a very different background than a lot of people. And this is, I think, part of what drew me to you once I like started talking to you, getting to know you. Growing up in Holiday, Utah, I never met anyone like you. Like, no, not even close. I mean, everyone I grew up with was well off, silver spoon in hand. Like, I mean, their life was pretty cushy and well set from the time they were born. That was not the case with you. You really had to fight for everything you currently have. What was it like coming to a state like Utah that, you know, there are people that struggle, but not quite the way that you did.
Yeah. I mean, that's good that you even like acknowledge that, because Coach Scally, like, to me, we're so far apart. Like, to me, so far apart. Like, you think about his high school, think about my high school, think about the upbringing, my upbringing. And that's why we banged heads so much my junior year. And then it's like, I felt like Coach Scally had something to prove, because he just took over the job as the safeties coach, because we had Coach Odom, and Coach Odom was just really laid back. Like, Coach Odom just like, all right, you know, y'all, I'm gonna let y'all do what y'all have to do. But then you had Coach Scally that was like on top of it, which, like, I played it this way. I played football this way. And it's like, that was your era. You know, like, things changed now, you know, like, we didn't have safeties that needed to make 100 tackles, you know. And it's like, you wanted me to play a certain way. And it's like, that's not how I played. And then it's like, it went into the background of like, well, this is because the way that you was raised, you know. And then it's like, compared to the way that I was raised, but this is me having these thoughts of like, he's on me because he don't understand me. Like, you know, he don't understand the struggle. He don't understand that my weight has nothing to do with the way that I play, you know. But I understood it later. I understood it completely later. And that upbringing was what made me tough. My brothers, them, my neighborhood. I mean, you know, I went to 3 different middle schools, 3 different high schools. You know, it was part of growing up in the inner city. And it's like, I didn't know anything about a warm-up until when I came out here to Utah, where Coach Elisaiah was like, Coach Elisaiah and Coach Argus was like, hey, yeah, we about to work out. I'm like, okay, cool. We get through a warm-up, 15, 20 minutes. And I'm like, okay, the workout is done. It's like, the workout hasn't started. Like, what? You know, like, when I'm in LA, it's like, I just kind of like put my cleats on, let's practice, I'm done, I'm walking out. So I had to learn, I had to understand how to be a football player, a complete football player, not just, I'm just going to do it right now. But that's how it is in LA, is that a lot of us play sports because it's just, we're trying to get out, but then we really don't know the full football player mentality. We just know the bits of it, because a lot of us football players don't get a lot of us higher achieving football players don't get a chance to go back to the inner city to talk to the kids about, this is not normal. You're half a football player now, because putting on shoulder pads, going to practice, but you got to be a complete football player by going to class, trying to set an example, understanding weight, understanding eating, understanding sleeping. It's a lot that goes in behind being a 100% complete football player.
I mean, I know I had to humble myself a ton after I met, because again, like, I never dealt with anyone that had to go through the things that you went through. And it was so eye-opening for me at 19 years old, freshman in college, to hear you talk about your life. And it's one of those things, like, I don't know if you know this, but so there was this one day you were like Googling stuff and like showing me around your neighborhood and like explaining and all that kind of stuff. And I was doing I totally get it. And then you left and I was on Google like, oh my God, I know nothing about this. Like, not a bit. So I spent a lot of time after I talked to you researching where you're from, the history behind it. And like, it's so ironic because at the time I was not on the sports track at all. I was not thinking I was going to work in sports, talk to athletes, but it ended up coming in real handy, you know, two, three, four years later down the road, when I started having to deal with more guys like you, and it made it so much easier for me to build that bridge, to get to know people, because I had this background that I didn't have otherwise. And here's the funny thing that I like about, like, you, I remember when you graduated, you said you were never coming back. Like, you would come back and visit, but you were never living
here.
You're not coming back. Like, I'm out of here. Peace out. Yep. And here you are. And you're actually building a really great career now up at the U. Tell everybody what you're doing.
Yeah, I mean, you're 100% correct. I said, no, I ain't coming back here. I was like, I'll visit. I was like, I'll visit because I love the state, I love the university, but I'm not staying. And it's just, you know, things just happen. And you know, I found myself being done with the NFL, and I wasn't sure what was going to be my next step. I'm like, you know, like, I want all the listeners out here, all my Ute fans or anybody who's reading, listening, whatever this is, you know, sports will end, you know, and you're never ready. Like, it's a lot of us NFL players that has retired, mm-hmm. you know, or that's in the Hall of Fame. And I am about 100% sure that at least 98% of us would tell you that we wasn't ready to end. Like, no matter what, we just wasn't, you know. And as soon as it was over for me, I made that decision to move back here to Salt Lake City. And when I just made that decision, the decision was made because I know how good the state was. And I was raising my son. And I'm like, this is a good state to raise my son instead of raising him in an inner city. And then I have resources. I have resources from college, resources from people like yourself, different reporters, different coaches. I understood that I can probably talk to some people and try to figure out how can I continue to live, because football is over, but you have to live, you know. And job after job, I did a lot of bouncing around and a lot of different things. And then recently, maybe about a year and a half ago, I read this book, The Alchemist. Okay. I read this book called The Alchemist, and it kind of put me focused, like laser focused, on what I needed to do as like a personal leisure, or like my purpose of life. Cause I was trying to figure out what the heck is my purpose. It's like, I don't even know. All I know is football was like a good purpose.
Yeah.
But purpose was great, you know, but it was like, I needed to do something after. Then I started realizing I enjoy training kids. I enjoy sharing my experiences. I enjoy telling my stories. I enjoy listening to where a kid that's in Utah, woman or a man, what they're going through, and seeing what can I help them with my experiences and things that I have done that helped me and got me to where I was at. And it wind up working out really well where the University of Utah reached out to me about being a U career success, career coach. So I'm a career coach now at the University of Utah. And I help out with the first year and second year, or freshmen and sophomores, with their career choices, which is something that's very big for me, because I didn't know that we had this many resources. Mm-hmm. Being in the athletic world, you don't deal with a lot of the student body, yeah. or like the business center, or different resources that I didn't know that was out there for us. You know, it's not a such thing as you're an athlete, you don't get this resource. It's like, you're a University of Utah student. You get all the resources because you're a student. You know, you're a student first, athlete second. But I didn't know anything about this. And now I'm a career coach where I'm helping out with resumes, giving interview prep stuff, also doing cover letters, internships, job shadowing opportunities. I'm doing this for the freshmen and the sophomore. And to me, that's something that's just big, and it gives me the opportunity to stay in the Utah Red, you know, I'm staying in it. And I'm also being able to just give back some of the things that has helped me. And it's a great opportunity. And I've been doing it for about a month and a half, and it has been amazing. And it's one of the best things for me to feel like I'm part of a team again, because we're all from so many different backgrounds, my other coworkers, and we all got one goal, which is to help a kid graduate and make sure that the kid have a career after you get done with college. And it's not even a kid. I mean, I got to say student, because, right. You know, you're not a kid anymore when you're in college. You're a student. You're a adult, you know. So I'll say, like, that is one of the biggest goals right now that we have at my job at the University of Utah as a career coach, is to help your students, or help your kids, which help the student graduate and have a career set after.
I mean, all you are is the adultier adult in the room at this point.
Right.
yeah, I've had to accept that at that point, and it's hard.
It's hard, yeah. And that's why I'm glad that Katie Abbey gave me an opportunity to jump into this role, and she's seen me as a great fit and a great example to talk to the freshmen and the sophomores about life choices, because enjoy college, better enjoy it, you know, do what you have to do. But try to have a good foundation that you can get yourself set up for when it's over, because just like sports, you're going to have to graduate at some point. And then even if you don't graduate, college will end. Like, you can't be in college forever. And like, if you do be in college for a long time, awesome. Master's program, no PhD, all that good stuff. But eventually you're going to have to stop at some point, because it's levels where it hits a ceiling. So when it stops, at least have something to set up, which is where I come in at as your coach. And I mean, having a retired NFL coach, I think it could be good, beneficial, you know, retired NFL player as a career coach for you.
Well, I think what makes someone like you so good in a position like that is you were in a place, and I think people are much more aware now than when you kind of went through the program. But as you mentioned, eventually sports end. And I think, you know, a lot of you were not prepared for, well, what do I do when sports ends?
Yes.
And so, you know, it's kind of the same thing. College eventually ends. Mm-hmm. What are you really planning on doing when college eventually ends? I think someone like you that's kind of been in that place where it's like, I don't have the next step. I don't have the next plan. I think hearing that from someone like you is a lot easier to take than someone that just kind of comes in like they know it all.
You've been
through that struggle.
Yeah. And that's why we like rebranding that whole career center. Like, we like changing it all up. And like I said, Katie, she's amazing to kind of have this outlook that's like, Rojo, you didn't been through how many jobs? Like, I was like, 6 jobs. And she said, your experience is the most important to these kids, to these students. They will listen to you more because they'll understand that when you say one job don't fit all, one job don't fit all. It took you a while to find your niche and find out what you're good at. So I'm like, yeah, I can be relatable with the students instead of just, like you said, being a higher education person that I know it all. You need to do this and do that. I'm more of just like, how can I help you?
Right.
You know, like, what can I help you with? You have any questions? I want to answer them. You know, like, that's what I'm here for. And I'm just excited and been happy and been proud of myself to like stick to my little journey after listening to the book, just sticking to my journey, and just like, things will work itself out, and it's working itself out.
Now, you said something else that I thought was really interesting. And it reminds me of something that another former NFL player said to me. He was our quarterback with the Salt Lake Stallions. His name is BJ Daniels, but he always would talk about, when I was being recruited, I made sure I thought about, you know, where can I go back and call home, and where do I think I'll have the best resources? I don't know that you necessarily thought about that when you got your opportunity with Utah, but how do you think that's kind of played out for you, you know, even without having thought about that? Because obviously I think it's worked out pretty well for you.
Yeah. Yeah. And Utah is home for me. You know, it's like, I didn't grow up here. I always let it be known I didn't grow up here and things like that. But I'm currently living here because the state of Utah has been the best choice for me and has been the most growth. I have grown a lot as a man and a father being here in the state of Utah. And now I'm back at the U, and it's like, I'm not on a 3-year scholarship, you know. I'm there, and I'm going to make sure that I try to help out as many students as I can there. On top of that, show how appreciative I am about calling this home, because this is home for me. And, you know, people be like, Salt Lake City, Utah. And I'm like, just come visit. Like, I tell them all the time, just come visit. Like, you know, there's nothing wrong with visiting, you know, come visit, come to Salt Lake City. Don't go down south. You know, that's different. Don't go there. You know, but, you know, like, come to Salt Lake City and just experience it for a weekend, and then you make your own thoughts behind it.
But what you're doing at the U is not the only impactful thing you're doing. You just barely held a flag football camp, and you are also working with 2 other former Utes doing some mental health stuff. Talk about those things.
Yeah. So, like I was saying about this book, like, The Alchemist has really, that book made me stay where I feel like my journey was to give back and help. And it started with OG Therapy. One of my good friends, Dave, I can never say his last name right, but Dave Kozowski, but we call him Kaz.
Yes.
I'm Kaz. And then I'm like, his last name is like Monsters the Movie. Like he laughed at it when I said it. But it's like the one of the monsters on there, his name Kozowski, I think, right? So yeah, so yeah, Kaz is me, Kaz, and then it's Kenneth Scott. Hey Scott. And we was doing something, we're doing it now, OG therapy, we call it, and it's Shosa Health. We're pretty much trying to figure out a way to just have students, which is another thing working with students, teenagers, students, being able to talk to us about the social health part, because social health is very important. And it's so hard to talk about that, because sometimes, well, the way society is, it's like you use social media to talk about it when that's not the best outlet. Mm-hmm. So the way that we was looking at it for our OG therapy was just being able to talk to some of the teenagers in high school and let them express or ask questions. And we just give them experiences where we're not trying to tell them what to do. We're just trying to give them a different look coming from our view when it comes to that. And that is called OG therapy with, like I said, Kaz and me and K Scott. And we always do different episodes. You can find us on podcasts now. We're on there. And then I recently just did a camp. My camp is going to last another 4 sessions. We already closed off because we had a lot of kids, but I would love to have more kids. And my camp is just skill camp for flag football. Instead of me doing tackle football, I was like, I'm just going to do flag, because flag is to me is the best route to go about when it comes to playing football. And I'm out there training the kids to not be professional athletes. Mm-hmm. I'm training them to love football, because if you love football, you will do more and figure out a way to get to that level without me even telling you. So that's what me and my partner, Kent, that's what we have came up with. It's like our mission is to see if the kids love football. Like if you love football, we can always make it work. If you don't love football, you can still be out there with us. You can figure it out, you know? So that's been my goal with my camp. And then on top of the camp, I still do public speaking. I still do public speaking, you know, I still do that a lot, where I go talk to kids this time, not just students, but talk to kids, talk to some of the high school football teams. And it's just has been wonderful to just be able to make sure I stay on this journey that I've been going on and not let any distractions move me from the purpose of life that I was mentioning earlier. So it's like I have a lot of stuff going on, but it's not wearing me out because I enjoy it. You know, like it's not a desire to go find money. It's the purpose that I'm love giving back is the purpose.
One other area where you're giving back is you sit on a board for the Crimson Collective as well. You talk about like how do you feel about NIL for starts, and what is it that you kind of help guide the Crimson Collective on?
Well, you know, I'm gonna be honest. It's like I'm helping out. I told them I don't really want to be on the board, mm-hmm. and that's a personal reason for me. Mm-hmm. Is because when it comes to likeliness and imaging, you know, NIL is, you know, is exactly what it says right there. You know, it's just the imaging, the likeliness and all that stuff. It's like, you know, when I was in college, I didn't get any of that.
Right.
I didn't get any of that.
But then when I was, it, though.
Yeah,
you
right.
Like, well with it.
I wish. Yeah. But then like being on the board, it was some parents that reached out to me just because they know that I played football at the U. Mm-hmm. And like I said, it got personal for me because I'm like, you know, my picture, my imaging, people are reaching out to me because they see my picture. And I didn't get selfish, but then I felt like it was starting to get a little selfish because I'm like, well, I'm not getting any money for this. And it's like, I'm helping the kids and helping the student athletes. But it's like, you know, I'm still jobless at that time, you know, and going through this is like, so I decided to tell them, like, I'm just take me off the board and I'm just going to help out, mm-hmm. you know? And I did that because I felt like I was getting very egotistic about, like, I'm not getting paid, you know, and things like that. And that's why I felt like I need to step away from it, because that's selfish and that's not right. But I still help out. I help out here and there. You know, I'm very happy for the kid, for the student athletes that's getting paid, whether they're female or they're male. You know, they deserve it. And, you know, I know when I was in college, I wish I would have had the opportunity to do it. But right now it's a new era and they deserve everything that they needed, because I know what it's like to be a student athlete. But it does make you feel like they being a little, some people are selfish or entitlement because there's no loyalty. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that can make and break a team, because you can have a player that don't want to battle for a starting position, but then they feel like they got other money. Oh, I got extra money. I can go to this school and get extra money. And it's like, you're not loyal, but it's a hit and miss. I'm in the middle, and it's not good to be in the middle, but I am, because student athletes need to be paid because of what they go through. But this, the entitlement part, the loyalty, that's not something that I'm behind.
I get that. I understand that. I would say so far, it seems like Utah's done a good job of retaining guys, though, even if they're not necessarily able to pay them, you know, the going rate of other places. What do you think about the job that Utah's done, at least so far early on in this new era that we're all still trying to figure out? And why do you think guys still opt to stay, even though they could go and get a bigger paycheck someplace else?
I believe that we have a bigger chance of developing players. Mm-hmm. We're like one of the few universities that still have the same coaching staff. So we can all talk. Like, I still go up to the university and some of the players talk to me, and it's like the same thing y'all was going through, I went through, because it's the same coaching staff. So sometimes that make a player see that the loyalty is there, you know, because it's a lot of college coaches that says that they're loyal, but then they wind up leaving. And they wind up leaving those kids in the dirt, where it's just like, hey, I'm out. You could transfer with me. You know, I'm not saying anything about Colorado, but I mean, you see how that kind of like transpired when I'm a big Deion Sanders fan. But still, if you think about it, just like in a different perspective, it's like these coaches, they be leaving so fast, and they'll have a player that they say that they love and they want you. They sit in your living room, and then they wind up leaving schools and then leaving you behind, but they take a certain player that they want. Like, that leaves a hole in that student player's heart about like loyalty. So I can see that's why some of the players will leave. But then when you have that loyalty through the coaching staff, the players will stay. And it's showing at the University of Utah, since our coaching staff, we might change here and there, but the base of the coaching staff is still the same. So those players are more willing to stay and more willing to trust that they're developing. They're getting developed into an NFL player, or just getting developed into a better person.
Looking at the makeup of this team now, obviously they've also accomplished some incredibly high highs, winning back-to-back Pac-12 championships, going to two Rose Bowls in a row. Granted, those were not wins, but still just having kind of an opportunity that a lot of people dream of but never get to actually even sniff, really. You know, but as someone that's also accomplished something very, very large at that university, what's it like sitting back and watching this current group kind of go through the motions of what they've been doing the last few years?
I'm very proud of them. Like, I'm just very proud of the university program. I'm very happy, very proud. And the way that I'm looking at things is that this is me having my perspective, is that we're lining ourselves up to get a national title. Seemed like that has been the biggest goal. That was my goal when I was playing. Like, that's always been a goal that we have as a football program, is just getting ourselves in the spotlight and getting ourselves into that national title. And seeing some of the realignment that just happened, the big realignment where we're going to a different conference. The goal, and like I tell fans and try to explain to people, the goal is to have a national title, get into that power conference, or get into a better position where we don't get overlooked, because University of Utah has always been overlooked. Even when winning Pac-12 championships, we're still overlooked. But now getting into this conference, you can't overlook. Get into the new conference next year, you're not going to be able to overlook it, because we're in that power conference, I guess, or whatever. So we should have a better opportunity to get into that national championship or get into the playoffs as the first step. You know, we haven't gotten to a playoff position yet, so let's get into a playoff position and let's try to win this last Rose Bowl that we'll be part of. Let's take it one game at a time. So, yeah, I'm like very happy and proud of the way that the team is going and proud of the way that the players are taking it, because you can get big headed quick, but they're taking it pretty well. And we're going to see what it's like this first game on the 31st, that Thursday, when Florida come to us. And I know that the stadium going to be rocking.
Oh, it's absolutely going to be insane. Like, even on a Thursday, leave no doubt that it will be crazy. You know, you're someone that's dealt with personal tragedy, this current team, and some guys have graduated out, but like they've dealt with some immense personal tragedy and they've still come out on top. You were someone that's dealt with immense personal tragedy and has come out on top. What were you thinking when all the stuff came down about Ty Jordan, Aaron Lowe, and seeing the team kind of skyrocket the way that it did, even though, I mean, they had to have been absolutely reeling with what was going on. I can't even imagine.
Yeah, I was going to say, I can't even imagine it either, because it's tough. It's tough to watch a teammate that was just there with you at practice, then all of a sudden, he's not there the next day, like during the weight room calling. So it's kind of tough to kind of see that. And you know, the university was already on the up and up.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe that those two devs just added just more fire to the way that you got to come together as players, because you just never know. And I think that that's one of the biggest things that we're holding on to at the University of Utah. Is just like our family break that we have, it really means a lot, because now, honestly, like I said, you can see that player at practice that day. And then the next day, you know, his locker is just empty. So I believe that that has lit the fire of like really pushing the family part. And then that's probably what keeps players around as well, because, you know, it's a real family. Like, you know, it's you make money now, NIL makes money. But in reality, it's like, you know, the family break really means a lot. It doesn't mean just like we're just here, we're going to transfer out. It's like it means more than the world, because you didn't see the way that we kind of came together. And those players has graduated out, but they still bleeding the same thing into the new players. And that's probably why some of those new players even committed to Utah, because of what they've seen. Mm-hmm. So the legacy lives on. It's just going to continue to go.
You were with Scally in his very early years. You were actually also with Witt in his very early years as a head coach. What kind of progressions have you seen from those two since you were actually a player?
Well, I mean, I'm happy Coach Witt cut the mullet or whatever it was he had. I was like, Coach, this is getting out of hand, man. But no, I have seen, like, I mean, like, I always say Coach Satake is my father figure. He always has been there for me. But I have seen the growth from Coach Witt. Like, he's not living in the moment. He know how to coach players and know how to get players going. And he also know how to just, as an alum, he remembers everything about us. And I think like that makes it special. And like, he understand that you can coach and be a coach and just be like, I'm a head coach and go from there. Or you can be personable and really like build that relationship and like talk to us on a personal level, which makes us have his back and commit to him. Even if we're not football, even if we're not on the football team anymore. And then Coach Scally, I've seen the growth with him. I just haven't sat in the meeting room with him yet. So once I sit in the meeting room with him, I can tell you like, oh yeah, I know he changed. But seeing him on the field, he's still the same, mm-hmm. You know, fireball. He's going to say everything he has to say at practice. He's going to get on you. He's going to make you better at practice. Then during the game, he's really chilled and laid back, you know, and that's how he always been. Like, I can see in the next couple of years, not saying it's going to happen, so don't mark my word, but I can see the next couple of years of like, him being a head coach and doing things for either our program or another program or organization, you know, you mm-hmm. want to go as deep as that. Like, he's a good guy that could definitely make things happen, and his growth has been amazing.
So to bring this kind of full circle, we talked about, it's been 15 years since that Sugar Bowl win, that undefeated season. You're getting inducted into the Crimson Club Hall of Fame. What do you guys have planned for that UCLA game when you get the official call out? Are you guys doing anything big for that?
Nah, we're not doing anything big. I feel like we just going to be more excited to see each other. I think that's like, that has always been our thing, even that undefeated season. Like, we took the win, we get the win, but we turn around and we have fun with each other. It's just was like one of those things. We didn't do anything too crazy. Mm-hmm. So I don't think we're going to do anything other than probably be surprised that some people probably got beards. Some people got beer bellies, you know, it's going to be more of like just the laughter and jokes of just having seen each other in so long. Because it's a couple of guys that didn't come during the summertime. I said that they're going to come for our induct. So we're going to see where everybody at, because everybody body and everything changed. So, but it's still the same personality. So we're not going to do anything too crazy other than just enjoy the moment and take it in. But then also just look at each other like we really did it.
Well, I am looking forward to that moment in about a month, actually.
Yeah,
yeah, it's coming up fast.
Yes.
But where can people find you and keep up on what you're doing?
Yeah, so, you know, on my Instagram for sure, Robert L. Johnson 32, almost forgot that. Yeah, so my Instagram, and then I'll be on Twitter a little bit, which is my handle is The Rojo. The Rojo, 3-2, I think, or The Rojo, one of them. But I would say more of like, you can really find me now. And like, when it comes to setting appointments to meet with me, or maybe have your kids that's freshmen or sophomore that wants to meet with me as a career coach and just talk to them and see what I can help them with, you can find me on the career page as well on our career success page, where you can book me as a career coach and I could be your kid's career coach and I can give them whatever they need. But I'll be on LinkedIn a lot now. So my LinkedIn is Robert Rojo Johnson, and you can ask me questions on there and I can do whatever I can to help.
Well, thank you so much, Robert, for joining me on my podcast. It's always great catching up with you, and I know I'll see you on the sidelines soon.
Heck yeah, you will. And it's always good to catch up with you, too. And I'm very proud of you, too. Happy for you.
Thank you. Okay, guys. Well, that wraps up another episode of the Crimson Corner. We will be back next week with another special guest. But in the meantime, as always, go Utes.
Two years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby?
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.